morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 5th of December. This hour, we're going to be talking about drones. When did we start using drones? How do they work? When did we start using them in combat? Are they effective? Are there concerns about the use of drones? One former CIA station chief in Pakistan, where we have used probably the most drones, said we've crossed a line from using drones against known terrorists to using them more broadly against whole groups of militants. There are some international concerns and international legal actions that have focused on the U.S. program of targeted killings by drones in Pakistan's tribal lands. This hour of the program, we'll welcome your phone calls. Our guest is the managing editor of the Long War Journal, Bill Roggio. He's also president of Public Multimedia and is an adjunct fellow, Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, media fellow at the Hoover Institute, and contributor to the Weekly Standard. We'll be welcoming phone calls, and here is how you reach us. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page, if you would like to use that method of communication, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Bill, hello. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Kathleen. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, a pleasure to have you with us. What can you tell us? Do you have any updates on whether or not Iran did down a U.S. drone?
Yeah, I don't. It's really interesting. They released some video on this. It definitely looks like what's called a Scan Eagle drone, which is basically just a reconnaissance drone. It's a small one. It's not one used for armed combat of any sorts. They definitely have a Scan Eagle, and these have been used in Iraq, so it's possible that one of these was flying in the region and they have one and they captured one, or it's possible that they just pulled this off the shelf from the Iraq war, via one of their various Shia-backed militias inside of Iraq. The video looks a little strange. It has that stock footage feel to it. But we don't, the U.S. military is denying it, but it's possible. I don't know if the CIA flies these Scan Eagles or not. So even if the military is denying it, it's possible that another agency could have been flying it. But again, this is just a small reconnaissance drone. It's not like that large, what they called the Beast of Kandahar, which was basically a large stealth drone that the Iranians, that crashed in Iranian territory last year.
Mm-hmm. Give me a little history of the use of drones. When did we start using them? Why did we start using them?
Sure. You know, we've had unmanned systems of various sizes for quite some time, and the development of them began picking up in the 1990s. We armed the first drone in 2002. What's called a Predator drone, and we killed an Al-Qaeda operative and American citizen as well in Yemen. And then this went back to the drawing board, and they realized, hey, this is a possibility for use against terrorists in remote areas where we can't get security forces. So one of the big reasons why we like them, why the military and the government likes them, is because there's no risk to human lives. You don't have to send in a full team or conduct a massive airstrike, and with the risk of large amounts of civilian casualties, you can put a drone up there. It loiters around, could loiter around for almost a day. It could observe and then select its target and then fire precision weapons. The program was expanded, we started using these a little bit more in Pakistan beginning in 2004 and killed an Al-Qaeda-linked Taliban leader. And then there were a couple of strikes a year up until about the summer of 2008. And then President Bush really kicked up the program, and these strikes became a regularity. They were targeting Al-Qaeda, Taliban, the Haqqani network, the whole bevy of terrorist groups that are operating in Pakistan's tribal areas. Now, this is just the covert drone operations. The drones have also been used in the conventional conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan since the beginning of the last decade as well. So these drones, I do mainly the tracking of the drone strikes that occur in the unconventional areas or the covert areas, because I find that to be extremely interesting, where we're conducting drone strikes in territory with the approval of our allies, but then again, in Pakistan, they disapprove of it. But yeah, so, and the, you know, so there's been thousands upon thousands of drones launched per year, and in the hundreds where we've used them in against terrorist groups in Pakistan, in Somalia, and in Yemen as well.
Mm-hmm. And Bill, what about the risk to human lives? Part of the controversy here is that bystanders, innocent civilians, have been killed. Do we know how many have been killed, and is this a legitimate concern?
Well, of course, it's always a legitimate concern about civilian casualties. The one thing the drones do is they are the usage of the drones allows the U.S. government to do their best to limit the civilian casualties. I know that this is a priority to keep the civilian casualties low. Whenever you're in an armed conflict, it is impossible, absolutely impossible, to have zero civilian casualties. The goal, your goal should be zero, but you're going to do everything that you can to keep that number low. There's various estimates out there on the number of civilian casualties. Myself and New American Foundation put them at several hundred. And then you have the Bureau of Investigative for Investigative Journalism puts the number between 400 and 800. So even they don't know, because look at, you have 100% variation in their estimate as well. So the answer is, the reason we don't really know is because where these strikes are occurring, they're occurring in remote areas that are under control, particularly in Pakistan, of the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. And so you can't get reporters in there to conduct, you know, to research where, when these strikes occur. So, you know, there's a lot of anger at the use of drones, and they've caused civilian casualties, but we're looking at very, very low number of casualties. The other thing that I think isn't being considered is the very real threat that emanates from these areas. If we were to use conventional aircraft, if we were to carpet bomb or drop 2,000-pound bombs on targets, there would be a lot more civilian casualties. Of that, you can be certain of.
There has been more concern internationally, and from what I've read within the Obama administration, about the use of drones, the policy of using drones to carry out targeted killings presents, some are saying, a major challenge to the system of international law.
Yeah, you know, and there certainly is a lot of debate on this, on the actual legal aspect of it. And I think it's certainly a debate that should be had. Whether it's legal or not, there is, you know, the Obama administration believes it is, and they've made the case. And then a lot of others believe that it isn't. You know, we're setting a precedent for this is a way to go after terrorist groups. The interesting thing is, in the case of Yemen, Pakistan and Somalia, where we're conducting these drone strikes, each of the governments actually approves of them. President Hadi in Yemen said these are the greatest things, and we'd love to do more of them. The Pakistanis is kind of curious because they openly say they don't want the drone strikes, but secretly they've given us the approval to do so. So when the governments give you the permission to do this, and Somalia, of course, the Somali government is very happy to see Shabaab leaders being killed in these strikes. They're very infrequent there. So, you know, when you have the actual government saying it's approved, whether either overtly or covertly, you know, what is the legal issue there? So, and I think that's something that's never looked at when the legal argument is being made. But yeah, you know, look, I think that the debate on drones, it certainly should be had, but there is a lot of what I call fetidization of these drones. They're just another weapon system, really. And, you know, we could be using conventional aircraft. We launched cruise missiles at Al-Qaeda in the 1990s to attempt to kill Osama bin Laden. So if you're not sticking a knife in someone or strangling them, the reality is that it's all remote-controlled warfare. What is the difference if I look down a gun scope and shoot someone from several hundred yards away, if there's a pilot 20,000 feet in the air that's looking through a television camera or some other site and pushing a button to drop a bomb, or a pilot that's, you know, in Nevada from 8,000 miles away looking through their optics and picking a target? You know, we got to look at the policies of using this and not the actual technology itself.
Mm-hmm. You have said, though, that there have been probably hundreds of civilian killings. I have read other reports that say there are probably thousands of civilian killings. Shouldn't we know?
Yeah, we should know. And those reports of thousands, that comes from very unreputable sources. Look, what they're doing is basically saying if it wasn't a senior al-Qaeda leader identified, then they're all civilians. And that is absolutely untrue. A lot of times what happens is a strike will kill a low-level Taliban commander, and the people that were driving with them are their bodyguards. And so, yeah, the number, you know, definitely there's a variation. We know that it's several hundred civilians killed. I don't think there's any dispute of that. But to say three, you know, I don't think more than, I mean, again, I'm looking here at, when these talking about these numbers, because here's the reason why it's difficult to track these in Afghanistan or Iraq and whatnot, because there's all kinds of air operations going on there, and you can't figure out which one was a drone strike, which one was a helicopter, which one was a conventional aircraft. But we can in Yemen, Somalia, and Pakistan. We know when those are U.S. strikes. So I'm using that as a baseline, and knowing that, you know, the same type of operations are being conducted in Iraq and in Afghanistan. So we know that that number is in the hundreds. It's absolutely ludicrous to say that thousands have been killed in these strikes. Now, again, you know, that's certainly no comfort to the civilians that have been killed. But you have to understand that these strikes are effectively taking place in war zones.
Mm-hmm. The Red Cross and that organization has been monitoring international battlefields. The president of the International Committee of the Red Cross, Dr. Jacob Kellenberger, has said the central challenge with drone systems is to ensure that they are indeed capable of the level of discrimination required by international humanitarian law. What evidence do we have that they are capable of that kind of discrimination?
Well, given the fact that particularly that the CIA is operating this program and, covertly, you know, you're not going to have. But then again, even in regular military operations, you're not going to have some international observer sitting there and watching each and every strike. That's just not the way military operations work or covert operations work. In this case, we have to look at the results, and that's very difficult to do because, you know, but look, what the director of the International Red Cross is talking about here applies to all of warfare. How do you ensure that, you know, the limiting of civilian casualties is occurring? So it's just as true for drone strikes as it would be for conventional airstrikes, as it would be for a ground assault in a regular military operation. These are extremely difficult things to do. People want to hold the drones to a much higher standard than they're being held in any other type of conventional military operations. Let's just look at the fighting in Syria. Hundreds of civilians are being killed daily, and what is being done to monitor and ensure that civilians are not being killed needlessly? Absolutely nothing, because when you're in a war like this, there is ultimately very little that you can do, except, you know, but what we do know in the case with U.S. military, or I'm sorry, with the CIA conducting these drone strikes, you know, there's been a lot of interviews. I talk to people involved with the program. I look at the results of the program, and you can see that a very distinct effort is being made to limit civilian casualties. They've reduced the size of the munitions. They're trying to target terrorists as they're driving in cars as opposed to when they're operating inside compounds. But their mistakes will be made, and people will be misidentified. You cannot bat 1,000. To use baseball mm-hmm. terms, when you're talking about conducting air campaigns.
And Bill, tell me about the process. Who makes the decision that terrorists may be in an area? Is it the CIA? Is it the CIA in conjunction with other organizations? How are the areas targeted?
Well, you know, we don't really know. There's been a lot of media reports on this, New York Times, Washington Post. So what we think is happening, and what the administration at least has said, is that they have a list. They've created a list of people who are to be targeted, and then they pursue them, and then there's an approval process that, you know, someone's reported that it's gone all the way up to President Obama. I don't believe that. There's been, since he's been president, more than 300 drone strikes. I doubt that about every 4 to 5 days he's sitting down and pouring through a list of people to say yes or no on an individual target. That would be micromanaging, you know, on the level of Robert McNamara in the Vietnam War. You have officials designated within the CIA, and apparently there's some State Department involvement as well for approval, particularly with Pakistan. But we also have these things that are called signature strikes, and this is the more controversial of the types of strikes. The signature strikes are where they're identifying where they say there's a group of people who fit the profile of terrorists. There's a bunch of middle-aged men who are running around with weapons, and they're in a truck, and they're driving to the Afghan border. These strikes aren't as common as a lot of the media reporting has said. They do occur sometimes, but from what I'm told, it's often that those signature strikes are done in conjunction with other intelligence that says, and, you know, look, we see this, this fits the profile, and we believe that this individual is operating in this area, perhaps with these people at this time. So that's the more controversial of the two types of strikes. There's that, you know, that exact targeting of a terrorist leader. We have intelligence, he's traveling, and then we believe that someone's operating and moving. And then occasionally these strikes have targeted individuals, like say that they've loaded up mortars in their trucks and they're heading to the Afghan border, and they believe to be conducting an attack against coalition forces or against the coalition base inside of Afghanistan, and they'll go ahead and take them out. I've seen several reports of that nature of strikes occurring.
We welcome phone calls, and we'll take them momentarily. Our guest this hour is Bill Roggio. He's managing editor of the Long War Journal. And here is our number. If you have questions about the use of drones, the number of drone strikes have increased during President Obama's first term. We're talking about the use of drones, about an international framework here. And here is how you reach us. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program today, a documentary film crew followed a group of Wisconsin veterans on a trip to Pearl Harbor in June of this year. The documentary is going to air this weekend on Milwaukee Public Television, and there's a preview tomorrow night at the Discovery Center. We'll be speaking with Mark Segrist from He's the host of the show and writer and editor of the program from Milwaukee Public Television. And also we'll be talking with Ken Sweet, who was finishing an overnight guard duty shift at Wheeler Field when Japanese planes attacked Pearl Harbor on December 7th of 1941. So that's coming up, hour two of our show. Let's go to phone calls for Bill. We're talking about drones this hour of the program, and we start our calls with Mike in Prairie du Chien. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. I have about three questions here you hadn't covered yet. Maybe you would. I would like to know the physical size of these drones and how they're powered. Are they battery-powered, engine-powered, jet-powered turbine? And are they... Are they launched from carriers, or where are they launched from or flown from to the destination? And are they using them in the United States? I heard or read an article that they were using them on our civilians just snooping around on properties and things like that.
Yeah, sure. I could take each of those. The size of the drones, they vary from size of a small aircraft to small handheld drones, the size of, you know, a model airplane that you might fly outside, powered various different means. Most of them are propeller-driven aircraft, using gas systems. They're launched various different ways. The handheld ones are literally thrown by hand. Some of them have the mid-sized ones. They have, like, a catapult that is, pulled behind a truck, and then the largest ones are literally operate like an aircraft, and they can operate from aircraft carriers or small warships as well. But they are launched. They take off just like a regular airplane and land just like a regular airplane. And are they being used in the U.S.? They are. There is some law enforcement agencies as well are using drones, and the military obviously flies them in the U.S. as well. They have been reported to have been used in surveillance in several instances. I know that's a very controversial issue, but again, I say don't look at the technology on that. Look at the actual, you know, policy. They could also tap your telephone, and they could do lots of different things with the technology. Drones just another way for the government to conduct surveillance. They could just as easily put a piloted helicopter or manned helicopter up, or any other air system as well. It does lower the barrier and make it a lot easier for the government to conduct surveillance on U.S. citizens.
Could you tell me how, I wasn't very aware of this, could you tell me how, what would be the use for surveillance by drones of U.S. citizens? Why would they use it?
Yeah, well, you know, there. I think the most controversial case came, and there was like some type of cattle theft in I think it was like North Dakota, and I'm not certain of the details on this, but in that case, they conducted surveillance from is a remote area, and they conducted surveillance for a time, and then they made an arrest. But you can think of a lot of applications, like searching for, let's say, marijuana crops, or looking at drug smuggling. Another use is border patrol. Coast Guard could see you be using drones to monitor ports and monitor things of that nature. And then you could use them, you know, if you wanted to track, let's say you were tracking a mob boss and you wanted to see where the guy was going. Maybe this guy moved around a bit. You can, you know, certainly put a drone up and follow him around.
Mm-hmm. Does that answer your question, Mike? Thanks very much for your call. Our number is 800-486-8655. Jim in Lake Geneva is next. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Kathleen, Bill. I'm just listening, and I'm thinking that the legality of this assassination and the killing and these long wars are something we seem to be putting in a class like modern science craze and bloodless operation. The poor guys that are suffering PTSD and that are flying these drones evidently are seeing the actual kill, and we're seeing it on TV. I'm wondering how far beyond the reality of these long wars and this business of war we will go to any extent, and even in the United States, and flying these surveillance, it's just astounding to me the degree that we've sunk into this business of war. What do you think, Bill? Where do we stop this?
Thank you, Jim, for the call, Bill.
Thanks, Jim. And look, it's a great question. I'm of two minds on this one. To be perfectly honest, we're fighting an enemy that attacked us on 9/11 and has continued to try to conduct attacks in the United States. It killed 3,000 American citizens on September 11th, 2001, and a lot of people want to forget that. However, you know, there are certainly dangers of being in an endless war, and what it appears that we are in now. The drones are just a symptom of this. It's just the drones aren't a revolution in warfare. It's just an evolution of it's another weapon system. That's just evolved over time. You know, we should be having these debates. How long are we going to be war against Al Qaeda? But the reality is we can discuss this all that we want, but the enemy also has a say in this. And, you know, look, I'd be more than happy for this long war to end and me to go out and get a job to do something else. I'll do this for as long as it takes. But I have children that have to grow up in this country and that are going to deal with the same threat that we deal with today. I don't like it, but the reality is that we have an enemy that is that thinks in terms of decades and centuries, and we tend to think in terms of election cycles when we're conducting a war.
How many of these drones are manned, and how many are unmanned?
Well, by definition, they're all unmanned, so that means they're all piloted remotely. So any of the drones that we're discussing here are going to be remotely piloted. It could be at a control center at an Air Force base thousands and thousands of miles away, or it could be a guy standing a couple of miles away in a field with a laptop, and he's directing the drone to fly. So, it just depends on the size of the drone and the technology that's used and how they're flied.
So the person who is telling the drone to attack is looking at what? Looking at a computer screen that has what on it?
Yeah, so they'll be looking at a monitor that or several monitors that will have that will show. Typically, we're looking at the information in You know, just as you would watch, you know, we've all seen the videos like from the first Gulf War where you're looking at a strike camera. You know, it's the same type of thing. That's what they're looking at. They're looking at a television screen to see. And there may be other optics on there as well. They could look at through infrared or other through other methods. But typically they're looking at this visually and processing the information that way.
Thank you, Jim, for your call. Bill in Cottage Grove. Hi, Bill.
Hi, thanks. Just a quick comment and then a question. First, the person who called about the drones being used on U.S. citizens, that was a big right-wing blogosphere business against Obama about spying on citizens. I'm sure I was just trying to catch like people stealing cattle. So, but my question is that your guest suggests that the, quote, enemy, unquote, thinks in terms of decades and centuries. So how is it that using drones against these people, remote-controlled killings, to me it seems as though it would increase the danger to U.S. citizens, because just like we're trying to keep the nuclear weapons out of the hands of the Iranian government, are we inviting state or non-state players, actors down the road to get the technology and start firing off drones at U.S. citizens, firing them at the White House, whatever. So isn't it a short-sighted policy to use these now, because they'll simply be used, as has always been the case in history, used against the U.S. Later?
Well, I mean, look, our enemy has tried to attack us numerous times using aircraft. Should we stop flying aircraft because that's something that our enemy wants to use? We should use all of the weapons at hand, in my opinion, in order to pursue an enemy. But however, I do think there are, you know, we should be using these very carefully. I think the administration has been too liberal in their use of the drones. I think that the administration has substituted drones for an actual real policy to defeat a terrorist group. Basically, the administration is doing the same thing that was the Bush administration was criticized for doing, which is basically keeping a kill list and saying we could defeat an organization by killing its top leaders. But what, you know, focusing on the drones, what it really is doing, what it's failing to do is we're not dealing with Al-Qaeda's ideology. We're not dealing with issues of state sponsorship of terrorism. We're not dealing with issues of enemy-controlled territory in ungovernable spaces. We're not, you know, those are the real key issues, not killing an individual leader or not. Drones should be a tool in the toolbox. Instead, what the administration is doing is making the drones be its overall strategy. And I think that's the real failing. And that's so, with just using drones, to get to your question, the use of drones alone ensures that this becomes a perpetual war, because the enemy has shown a remarkable capacity to replace its leadership, because they have guys on the bench and they have an ideology that is, that appeals to a certain small percentage, but large enough to allow them to have a recruiting base. And they also have they have state sponsorship or state indifference to terrorism, that Pakistan can fit in both of those categories. So, you know, if we're not going to deal with those issues, then they're going to keep generating leaders, and we're going to keep generating drone strikes, and we will be in an endless war.
You didn't answer my question, but I hear where you're coming.
Well, go ahead and re-ask your question, and I'll give
it. I don't want to hog the time, so Ms. Dunn, please cut me off whenever you feel like it. My issue is, what if you're a 13-year-old Pakistani boy whose uncle and father were killed by a drone strike? Won't you, when you grow up in 5 or 7 or 8 years, if you have an opportunity in some group, a non-state group, to get the drone technology in your hands, wouldn't you feel pretty emboldened to use drones against U.S.
targets? But that's just a weapon system.
With the rocket launch, you can't detect them and shoot them down by the Iron Dome type situation.
Drones are actually quite easy to shoot down. They're very conventional technology. It's simple. The hilarious thing about the Pakistani objections to the use of U.S. drones is that they could easily shoot them down. You could take a World War II fighter and shoot down a drone. They fly slow, they're loud, and they loiter for long periods of time. Whether you're going to worry about whether a 13-year-old boy is going to say, well, I'm going to go get a drone, it's far more likely he's going to go to some madrasa and get training to become a suicide bomber or pick up a rifle and go and try and attack the U.S.
I mean 10 years from now. That's okay. Go on to your next caller. Thanks so
much. All right. Thanks very much for the call. If though, your neighbor has been killed because of one of these drone attacks and is an innocent civilian, and we're not sure how many of those there are, does this not, referring to the quote that I had at the beginning of this show, that this plays into the narrative that the United States is an enemy of Islam, and so it may draw more people to the cause of terrorism, to the cause of their militancy?
Well, look, and this is why I do think that the drones should be used judiciously. There is certainly truth to that, but what would be the difference if a civilian was killed? What if we used conventional aircraft, or what if it was a ground raid? Someone being killed by a drone as opposed to another form of technology, again, we're talking about, the question should be asked is, should we be conducting strikes in Pakistan, not worrying about whether it was done by a drone or done by a conventional aircraft or a special operations team? I mean, the issue that, you know, we're radicalizing people because we're killing innocent civilians. How many innocent civilians is Al-Qaeda and the Taliban killing? They kill hundreds of times more innocent civilians than we do, and yet we don't see an army of, well, actually we do see, and particularly in the case of Iraq, they do rise up against them. But look, what is the alternative? Do we allow Al-Qaeda to just metastasize in Pakistan's tribal areas and plot and to conduct another attack like 9/11 on the United States?
Is this war not as long because of the effectiveness of drones? In other words, have we really lessened the number of terrorists, the number of members of Al-Qaeda as a result of the drone policy?
I don't think so. I think what we've done is we've affected their ability to conduct attacks against the U.S. So what we're giving them a tactical setback, but it's not defeating the organization. So basically, one of the largest targets is in Pakistan's tribal areas is the what they call their external operations network. These are the ones that are plotting attacks against the U.S. or in the West, in Europe, or against, you know, U.S. facilities. We go after those very heavily. So we're killing, you know, some key operatives, but we're not. But these drones, they're just too few and far between. We're not, and not only that, they're occurring in a very small area. It'd be like saying we want to defeat the Ku Klux Klan and we're going to go into two counties in Alabama to do it. Well, you know, the Klan exists far, far beyond those two counties in Alabama. That's basically our strategy against Al-Qaeda.
So are you saying, Bill, that we need more drone attacks?
No, what I'm saying is we need to have a comprehensive strategy to deal with the state sponsorship ideology and the rise of these groups in ungoverned spaces.
Okay. Don in La Crosse, hi.
Hi. I took a quick look at this website of the gentleman, and I didn't see any concern expressed anywhere on it that of the fact that we're killing people in other countries that we haven't declared war on. And it takes 60 members of the Senate to get anything done over there, whether it's to protect our environment or tax ourselves, solve our cliff and ledge and all that stuff. And yet Obama has assumed the right to go and put people on his target list and kill people any country, anywhere in the world. And we're not supposed to say anything about it or even find out about it or know about it. He doesn't go to a judge. He doesn't go to the Congress or anyone else. This is ridiculous. And every time Rachel Maddow said the other night that, according to some figure she got from somewhere, and I don't know, it has as much legitimacy as what this gentleman says, that every time we kill a Al-Qaeda with a drone, 50 civilians is about what it's working out to be that we kill. That puts
That's wrong.
More people
That's
on their
wrong.
Bench
our
that they can put
wrong.
In future years. We're making enemies all over the world. And if we got to cut it out.
Well, look, first of all, Rachel Maddow's numbers are just, they're wrong. I don't know what to say. The second thing is the website, you know, you should take more than a quick look. It's not about my personal opinion. I'm just trying to track what's happening. My personal opinion, you could ask me, and I do have concerns that civilians are being killed. I just will say that I think that this is certainly a best effort from people that I talk to and from observing the program for almost a decade, that we're making a best effort to limit civilian casualties. There's no such thing as a good civilian casualty, but then again, there's no such thing as a bloodless war, and that's just the reality of the situation.
And yet, there ought to be a way for us to know how many civilians are being killed. Isn't that a crucial piece of information?
We still don't know how many civilians were killed in World War II, and we had complete and total access to the battlefield. It's impossible. We're asking for an exact number for something that we just can't get. We just can't get that level of detail.
And what about Don's?
We can estimate the number, and I think we have good estimates on that.
What about Don's point, Bill? And it's a legitimate one that this is all being done in secret. Who's deciding who's going to be targeted? Why isn't Congress involved in this? It's all such a secretive operation that nobody seems to have much say over it, other than the people at the CIA and the President of the United States, who are in on this together. We're not in on this together.
Well, you know, we do elect our representatives. I agree. We should have concern about it. But the reality is when you're fighting a we should be concerned. But in a covert war, we can't just make every detail of a covert war or any military operation fully available to the public for scrutiny. It's not possible. You couldn't conduct operations that way.
Let's go to Jeff in Madison. Hi, Jeff.
Yes, you made the comment, Kathleen, or asked, does this tend to shorten wars? And I would argue that it enables endless and limitless war. The way wars, Vietnam, others have ended in recent times is because people got sick of fighting them. They got sick of hearing about, on this side, Americans getting killed. They don't seem to get sick of hearing the other side getting killed. But that's the way wars have ended, by people rising up and saying, enough, we're sick of this. There is nothing in this very sterile, clinical weapon, and I disagree with your guess that it's just another weapon. There is nothing in this sterile, clinical weapon that will ever engender the kind of protest or enable the war to come to an end. I would say it just keeps it going. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
Sure. I actually agree with you on that. Only to the point, I do agree it's another weapon. What I think is the administration has been very crafty on this. Drones are extremely popular with the American public, and you don't see the deaths of Americans. So it really does enable them to conduct these strikes without much concern from the American public. I agree with you on that point.
We welcome more phone calls in just a moment. We're talking about drones this hour of the program, and our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The Wall Street Journal recently reported on debates within the Obama administration about the legality of the drone war in Pakistan. We're talking about increased use of drones, the endless war against terrorism. Is this an effective way to fight a war, to eliminate some of these terrorists? What about some of the civilian casualties? What about the whole secrecy of this? What about international law? There are concerns from the United Nations and other groups like the Red Cross about whether or not these use of drones are legal internationally, under international law. So a lot on the table, and we are getting a lot of response from you as well. We have reached a point in the program where there are lines open. If you'd like to join the conversation, please do so. Here's our number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program, we'll be talking with a documentary filmmaker, Mark Segrist, from Milwaukee Public Television, who accompanied 19 Pearl Harbor survivors in a return trip to Hawaii in the summer of this year, and has put together a very moving documentary about that experience. It will be shown on Milwaukee Public Television this week, and there will be a preview tomorrow night, which we'll tell you about. Mark will join us, and Ken Sweet will join us as well. He's one of the 19 vets who returned to Pearl Harbor. He was an overnight guard on duty at Wheeler Field when Japanese planes attacked on December 7th, 1941. That's our conversation, hour number two. This hour, we're talking about drones and whether or not we should pay attention to international concern about the use of drones and whether or not they're effective in shortening a long war against terrorism. Bill Roggio is our guest, managing editor of the Long War Journal, media fellow at the Hoover Institute, and contributor to the Weekly Standard. Richard in Monroe County is next. Hi, Richard.
Hello.
Hi.
I want you to know that we have a drone operation starting up in Volk Field in Wisconsin. There's also plans to do a drone airfield at Fort McCoy. My question is this a production thing, like a new war toy that we're going to be selling to everybody all over the world?
These are both production facilities that you're mentioning here?
Richard? I'm sorry, go ahead. I'm having trouble with this phone.
Oh, okay. I'm just wondering if there are production facilities, both in Brookfield and, you said, and in Fort McCoy, they're building drones?
They're building an airfield for drone operation.
See.
And they also have somewhat of an operation going at Volk Field in Wisconsin already to train, for training. But I want to know if this drone thing is like, we're building this new toy that we're going to be selling to everybody all over the world.
That's a good question. Bill?
Yeah, the U.S. will very likely be exporting this technology, and other countries are working to develop the drones as well. And other countries actually have developed their own and are flying their own drones as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, again, this is the next evolution in military weaponry. A lot of people don't like it, and you know, but, you know, look, cruise missiles basically did the same thing two decades ago. They're remotely flown. You hit a target. They just have a bigger payload. And, you know, we could build weapons, you know, weapon systems or weapon systems.
We'll have to look into that. I wasn't aware of that. It'll be yet another show. Craig in La Crosse. Hi.
Yes, regarding civilian casualties, I mean, that's something that happens in war, you know, and what it comes down to is we have to ask ourselves, we have to face the real dilemma of drones are being used. Do we want civilian casualties, you know, on drone strikes in Pakistan, you know, or do we take civilian casualties when Al-Qaeda operative, you know, makes it through and gets over into the United States, you know, or into Madrid again, or into London again, or to Bali or wherever it is, you know, and they unleash more terrorist attacks, you know, and then you have civilian casualties. Civilian casualties are inevitable. They're going to happen in war. So do they happen with drone strikes or do they happen with terrorist strikes? You know, you tell me.
Yeah, and not only that, do they happen where we can use less precise weaponry, cruise missiles or large bombs dropped from conventional aircraft, which, by the way, aircraft could be modified with smaller weaponry and have the same effect as drones. One of the reasons we fly drones is because we won't have civilian casualties, we won't have a pilot lost over Pakistan. But yeah, I mean, look, war is not a zero-sum game. You have to make decisions, you have to make calculations, like the last caller just mentioned. You know, we can sit back and do nothing, and ultimately, I think, we'll have another 9/11-style attack, or, you know, it's not like they stopped after 9/11. You know, they almost detonated a car bomb in Times Square. They in 2010, they almost blew up an aircraft over Detroit in December or Christmas Day 2009. They're still trying, and the drones are an attempt to prevent them from conducting attacks. My criticism of the program is it's not an ultimately a way to defeat Al Qaeda. We're not doing enough on that front, doing more meaningful things. It's a stopgap.
Thanks very much for the call. Let's go back to Pakistan for a moment. It seems to me as though you've got some problems when you have the Pakistani ambassador declaring, we keep throwing around these numbers, it'd be nice to know exactly what they are, but the Pakistani ambassador has declared that more than 1,000 civilians have been killed in his country by drone strikes, and he says, we find the use of drones to be totally counterproductive in terms of succeeding in the war against terror. It leads to greater levels of terror rather than reducing them. We have the ACLU estimating that 4,000 people have been killed, and they're concerned about the CIA being involved involved in targeting lethal operation being classified, which they say is absurd fiction, something that's being debated in U.N. hallways and committee rooms, cannot apparently be talked about in U.S. courtrooms. Your response to both of those?
Well, as far as the Pakistanis go, I find any of their objections to be humorous because the government continues behind the scenes to allow the U.S. conduct drone strikes. And we even have a base. It's questionable whether it's still open, but we were conducting drone strikes from a base in Pakistani territory for quite some time and still may be, for all I know. So if the Pakistanis want to shut it down, they could. They would just tell the U.S. to stop. They could expel the U.S. ambassador. They can do quite a bit of things to make, and they could shoot down the drones at any point that they wanted to. Again, we know where they fly. They fly over North and South Waziristan. It's like flying over, you know, New Jersey. They could set up some air defense base, and they could easily pick these things out of the sky. As far as, you know, look, the Red Cross has 4,000 people. Well, how many of those people were civilians? How many of those people were terrorists and Taliban fighters? That's so, you know, you got, when you throw out numbers around like that, you need to be a little bit more specific. You know, as far as the legality goes, you know, when you look at this, again, if Pakistan is permitting the U.S. to do this, if Yemen is permitting the U.S. to do this, you know, where is the legal issue? You know, that's what I want to know. And, you know, somebody should be asking that question to the governments of Pakistan and to the government of Yemen of why you're permitting the U.S. to conduct drone strikes and why you're allowing the U.S. If you want to say 1,000 civilians were killed, why did you allow the U.S. to conduct strikes to kill 1,000 civilians?
And what about the government of the United States? The ACLU has, through the courts, asked for information about targeting policies. The Obama administration has rebuffed them.
Well, you know, look, again, you can't expose there is a reason why information like that should be classified. The more the enemy knows about how we're targeting them, the more they can take measures to prevent themselves from being targeted. So, for instance, we've seen a lot of leaks on the program that have given Al-Qaeda and the Taliban the ability to dodge these strikes. For instance, it came out, I believe ABC News released this a couple of years ago, that we basically had spies enlisting them to put tracking devices on, like a car or whatnot. What did those groups do? They started finding people that were doing this and publicly executing them, quite brutally in many fashions as well, strapping suicide vests and making people watch them, launching anti-tank rockets at them as they stood in an open field. So this is the enemy that we have to deal with, and there are real-world consequences to exposing the full nature of your operations.
Mike in Appleton, hi.
Yeah, good morning, Kathleen. I think one of the critical uses, as the guest, maybe he's already pointed out, for drones is their intelligence gathering capability. You could put it over a target, fly it around. One, it gathers intelligence. Secondly, it keeps the terrorist hidden in his cave or his hut. And we know that to be true when they fly around. These guys are hiding. But the most important point I wanted to bring up is that as we have this sequester and the defense budgets increasingly diminish, we're going to realize, and I know they do now, that we can't park an aircraft carrier off of every coast and fly sortie after sortie of F-18s taking intelligence pictures to provide intelligence to our Afghani allies when we leave there in 2014. We already left Iraq. We still provide them intelligence. We have to have the means to provide them on-the-ground intelligence without the huge expense of flying U.S. Air Force jets from distant locations or carriers parked off the sea. We can't afford that anymore. So, you know, frankly, drones are probably the best use to provide our allies real intelligence so that they can pick up the ground effort on their own.
Bill, we have about 40 seconds.
No, that's absolutely right. And also the one thing that we didn't note is the drones are a lot cheaper than conventional aircraft, for instance. Now, but they also don't have the same capability. So you can't really use a drone in, you know, air-to-air combat. But for surveillance and for loitering over target, as the caller mentioned, he's absolutely correct. It's perfect for that. There's a reason why the U.S. military is buying more and more. They pretty much double the order of these about every year.
Thank you so much, Bill, for being with us. It was really an interesting conversation, I must say. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Kathleen. Mm-hmm. Always a pleasure. And thanks for your guests, your callers as well. Very interesting talk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're good callers. Bill Raggio, managing editor of the Long War Journal. He's also president of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, media fellow at the Hoover Institute, and he contributes to the Weekly Standard. Thanks to Brett Jaspers and Rhonda Fanning, who produced this program. And thanks to all of you for your participation in the program. Lots of good calls today on this issue. We'll follow up. We'll look at that, what's going on in Wisconsin on this. Please stay with us for hour number two of our show. It should be a really good program. We're going to speak with Mark Segrist, veteran journalist, and Ken Sweet, World War II vet, about their return to Pearl Harbor.